Ladies and gentlemen, the Lenny Bruce of hot air balloon humor, Ryan Hamilton.
I'll take it. I'll take that title. I mean, it's amazing what one hot air balloon joke can do, you know?
See, now, as I want to talk to you, first of all, I'll tell everybody listening to this right now, you're going to be here at the Flagstar, the Strand Theater in Pontiac, which is a beautiful old theater they restored, Ryan. It's got great bones to it. You're going to love it. It's a great vibe in there.
I keep hearing that. I'm very excited. I love to do these theaters, and I'm really excited about this one. I love when there's like it's pretty recently been.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I know you don't drink, but we have a drinking game in Detroit. Every time the New York Times writes a piece about the Renaissance of Detroit, we take a shot. So we're all drunk. So it's kind of our thing.
Maybe I'm contributing.
Okay, yeah. No, the whole thing, you just did it there. But I was going to ask you about the hot air balloon, because the special was fantastic. Happy face.
Thank you.
And what was cool to me was, and I was thinking about you and your buddy Nate Bargatze. Now, you go on this whole thing about the hot air balloon. Nate got obsessed with a dead horse in his special. How long did you obsess about this hot air balloon? How many days did you sit around and that's all you thought about were hot air balloons until you could shape all this into this part of your show?
That joke just kind of took on a life of its own, to be honest. I just sat down one day, I remember going, what's something I've done that's not the totally a normal experience? And that kind of leaped into my head. And then I realized that it was kind of a failed tape. I thought that was funny. And I said, let's talk about that. But over time, it just kind of grew and grew and grew on stage, mostly, and in writing. But it wasn't, I took breaks from obsessing over it, is what I'm saying.
Is there something going on in your head right now that you haven't really shaped all the way out?
There is always something going on in my head that is not shaped out. Yes.
Okay.
It's just a constant shaping of things. But that joke, I got to a place where it's like, I've talked to every angle I can about hot air ballooning. And then I talked about people's reaction to how much I talked about hot air ballooning. So there's always another place you can take it. So who knows? Maybe there's another hot air balloon chuck lurking out there for them. You never know.
We were camping a couple of years ago with my family, and we were sitting there, and they had a glow that morning, right? Which, they're out there, and they light up the hot air balloons, and a couple of them take off, and they sail over the campsite. And I remember my son looked up and goes, where are they going? I said, that's the beauty of it. They have no idea. And at the time, I'm like, they're so free. And then to your point, I'm sitting there going, like, wait a minute. You don't get on a plane and go, where are we going? South? Right.
It doesn't feel like you're free. It's just the anxiety ridden when you're up there.
Right. I'm with you. I always complain about the wicker basket. I'm like, you mean in the world of all these new technologies, why don't we ask the guys from Formula One to build a basket that's better than wicker?
This is the technology that we still have that we've come up with. Yeah. I don't sit on wicker, as I said. It's special, and yet that's what we're doing. I know, and it's flammable.
And when you mentioned Remax Realty, I don't know if they have like a 10-year deal with every balloon in North America. It's true. It's true. Everyone has Remax Realty on the side. I'm like, is their marketing guy like, well, we can't get flow, so we're gonna go with balloons.
They just went with whatever they could get, I guess. Yeah, I don't know
who pitched that. You guys, we could do billboards. Yeah, we could do TV. No hot air balloons. Yes. Yes.
Maybe I should try and get the other side of the balloon. I could just get my face on the other side of the balloon.
Dude, you'd be amazing. I Googled you, Ryan, and it was funny because you always, when you scroll down to the bottom of the page, it gives you the searches. Now, the first two searches weren't Ryan Hamilton comedy. It was Ryan Hamilton, how tall is he? I'm not joking. I'm serious.
I know. There's something about people think I'm taller than I am. I know that. The most common question I get is, how tall are you? People think I'm like a giant for some reason. I don't know what it is. I think it's like the parts of my body are out of proportion or something. Like, I got like tall hands, but I got like normal other parts. I'm 6 feet tall, just to clear the air.
Okay.
And my special shot in a way where it like elongates me like a funhouse bear or something. I don't know what it is.
There was this old movie called Grizzly with Richard Jekyll where they did was took a brown bear and they panned the screen to make him like 10 feet tall. I'm pretty sure that's what they did to you in the special. Yeah. Yeah. That's all they did to you. They made you, you look like you're 8 feet tall during the special, Ryan.
I know. It's funny. I didn't notice it really until people started like asking a lot. And then I was like, I guess. But you know what? I've got that even before the special came out. I would get pretty commonly people who would come up to me after the show and go, do you look shorter than you do on stage? There's something about the way I move or something about the way my body's proportioned that makes me taller. It's like some magic trick.
Well, you don't walk around like you're Robert Ludlow or something from the Guinness Book of World Records or anything. Come on, you're not 8.5 feet tall.
No. I just appear taller than I am, I guess. It's my superpower, which is totally useless. There's not a lot of.
The other thing I had to share with you, like, when I love Googling people for this stuff. So I'm looking at all your, like, it says Comedy on Tap, you know, $1 billion, clean guy, Brian Hamilton, new special. And then I get to, where is it? Right here. The Idaho State Journal, East Idaho native releasing stand-up comedy special. That is the dullest headline. That's the most Idaho headline I've ever seen.
in East Idaho, that is a very exciting headline.
Is that the New York Post kind of vibe for East Idaho?
There's nobody that's ever released a comedy special from East Idaho, so I think that catches people. Just comedy and comedy special, I guess. I don't know. I was very grateful to the people of East Idaho for I never felt any lack of excitement from them about the special.
It's above Local Boy gets a scholarship to Vandals. Yeah, to go to Idaho.
Well, I'll say this. They could probably run a story about me about a half a dozen times already. There aren't a lot of opportunities to talk about comedians from East Idaho. So by the time they ran that story, the writer's probably like, I'm talking about this guy again. I can't believe it. But okay.
Now, I have to tell you, we have Ryan Hamilton on with us, of course, RyanHamiltonLive.com, Ryan Hamilton on Twitter, Facebook, all your social media. Here in Detroit, the Flagstaff Strand Theater in Pontiac, a week from Saturday. That'll be the 20th. It's a great venue. But I was reading about you, and I remember watching the special, and you were talking about Idaho. Now, through some very weird circumstances, I wound up living when I was 14 years old for a year in Salt Lake City, Utah. Total transplant.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So we lived in Granite, Utah, this little burp. So then my dad and I get in the car, and we decide we're going to go to Idaho. So we drive up north, you know, we go to Idaho. And now I know you talk about it, but when we drove over the border, we drove into Idaho, the first restaurant I remember seeing sold nothing but giant stuffed potatoes.
We're proud of it.
I know. But I'm like, that's typecasting. That's like when you come and when you drive, it says, welcome to Detroit. We don't have a poster of M&M standing there and a gunshot.
Well, maybe you should.
Maybe we should. It's good marketing. Maybe we can get in the Idahoan. I'm telling you, though, we did. It was a giant. I went in there and I had a giant potato filled with like chili and stuff and all this. And it was my dad's like, that's a great potato. And we went to Idaho and had a potato. I'm like, well, we can get them here. They're all over the country. They're spreading worldwide.
You did it. And you're still talking about it today.
I know.
It worked. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm from like, if you saw the home that I grew up in, it's just potato fields as far as you can see all around me. And so I guess it's in my blood. I don't know. And we get out of school to harvest the potatoes in my little town for 2 weeks in the fall. There's no school. School is not in session. So that the town can harvest the potatoes. That's what we do. And I would get a job every year. And that's how I bought my first car, actually.
Come on. Are you serious? You're messing with me.
No, this is real. I earned like $600 in the Spuds with my Spud money, and I bought a 1972 Volkswagen Beetle. Yeah, and that's how I bought my first car. And everybody does that. Yeah.
Okay. But, I got nothing for that. You've topped everyone with that story.
By the way, Spud Money is also my street name.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That is the worst rapper name ever, Spud Money. We have 50 Cent and you got Spud Money. That is the most Idaho rapper ever. You could be onto something here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, did you watch Crashing at all?
Yeah, I did. I didn't watch all of it, but yeah, I watched a lot of it. A lot of my friends were in it, and it was exciting to watch for me.
How real was it? I mean, I know a lot of what he was doing in there, and it was really compelling to watch for me as just a fan of stand-up comedy. Yeah. But how close to the right. truth was he?
I would think, as far as representations of comedy on TV, I think it was about the closest, you know? There's always going to be concessions you have to make to tell a story on TV because you have a limited amount of time and limited numbers of characters that you can use and things. But I would say the only thing that was a little different from the parts of stuff that I saw was how quickly and how fast he was able to ingratiate himself at kind of the upper echelon of comedy. As one, it takes years and years and years, but in the show it seemed to be a pretty rapid rise. But the barking and the street and the shows and the road gigs and that way all of that was represented, I thought they did a very excellent job of that. And yeah, I thought it was great.
When was the first time you got to sit at the table at the Cellar?
I was in New York maybe 4 or 5 years when that finally happened. And to be honest, I was about ready to call it quits in New York. I just couldn't get on stage. No one was giving me spots. I was doing my friend's, you know, produce shows, which was great. And I was going on the road, and I even had a couple of TV spots at the time. But in New York, when you move to New York, you start over. And I was there hanging out one night, and Amy Schumer, a dear friend of mine, one of the reasons that I moved to New York, to be honest. We both did our first TV set together. I'd never even been to New York at this time, but I was in New York to shoot this thing for Comedy Central. Amy Schumer was on the show. I didn't know who she was. She wasn't Amy Schumer then. It was our first TV spot. She came up to me after my set, and she goes, "You're moving to New York, and we're going to get a place." We never ended up being roommates, but she did take care of me and look after me. And about 4 years after I moved to New York, she was at the Cellar. At this point, she'd kind of been on her meteoric rise, and she asked the booker there if she'd ever seen me. She said, "I've seen you around. Do you want to go up?" This is not the traditional way that people get auditioned at the Cellar, by the way, but I hadn't been on stage in like 2 weeks because I just got home from this crazy vacation, which is maybe the longest I've ever not been on stage. Right. So I ran around town. She said, I'll put you up later, like 1 in the morning. I said, okay. I ran around, got spots to little shows I knew I could do. I put together a 5-minute set. I went on stage, and that was, she said, great. We'll send you your avails, and we'll start working you in. And I would get maybe one spot a week or a cancellation if somebody canceled. And I did that for a long time, but it changed my whole perspective on my ability to stay in New York. And that's when I started to work at the Cellar for real. And that was it. Really one of the biggest moments of my career, to be honest. When people ask me, like, what are some of the highlights? That's it. And unless you're really a fan of comedy or understand comedy, it's hard to get why, but that's it.
Well, we talk so much about, yeah. You know, with athletes, we talk about confidence all the time, how confidence is such a key factor. I'm hard-pressed to find a job that is more confidence-driven than stand-up. I mean, you've got to be supremely confident in yourself to get up on stage in the first place, but then the way you guys get knocked down constantly, you need those wins just to keep going.
It's true, and you can put a lot of fuel in the tank by just one of those. You know, you can survive on something like getting past at the Cellar for a couple of years if you have to, you know, just going, that was a validating thing for me, and I'm going to keep going. And there are those kind of milestones throughout my career that would probably surprise people that those are the important things that I was seeking and that made me go, let's keep doing this, you know, let's keep going after it. But yeah, you're right. It's true. And it's not just confidence on stage, as you mentioned, but it's just this kind of sustained thing over years that you have to just go, I want to do this. I'm going to do this, you know, and keep at it.
Now, I know you're touring with Seinfeld as well. You've been doing some stuff with Jerry. And in a lot of ways, you reminded me of Seinfeld during the special because there were moments when you got rolling. When Jerry gets going, he's like that guy who owns the room. He's the guy, everybody stops and listens to him. You had some moments, and it's a great special, but there were points, dude. My wife stopped in the living room and was listening to you go off about New Yorkers.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Very nice of you to say. It's very flattering. I know what you mean. I watch every show when I'm with Jerry, and I know what you mean by that moment where he's got people and it's really going. And I try to get there. It's really hard. It takes years of working on this material and performing it to the point where you can sustain it like that. And I really, that's a very nice thing to say. Thank you very much. It, Working with Jerry has been just it's just an education and in so many things, the comedy and the way he balances his life with his career and his family and you know, the way he thinks about comedy in terms of writing and creating. I learned so much from it. It's been a really great, cool opportunity to watch just, you know, the master himself.
Right.
I never thought I'd be in this position of being in New York, working in these clubs, and opening for Jerry Seinfeld. It's like, it's really, this is, I'm living what I've always wanted to do right now. And working in these theaters, this is what I'm just really still bowled over that I get to do this. It's really great.
Oh, it's a fantastic venue, man. The Flagstar, the Strand Theater here in Pontiac on Saturday, April 20th, Ryan Hamilton. I would get your tickets. It's going to fill up quick. It's just, like I said, a great vibe, Ryan. You're going to enjoy it. Now, because I lived in Salt Lake, I can tell you, unfortunately, unlike Salt Lake, we don't have a 7-Eleven on every corner. So I don't understand why. I've never seen such a densely populated area of 7-Elevens in my life. I still remember this, and this is like 30 years ago. I've never seen that many 7-Elevens. Yeah. I don't know what. Is there something in the Mormon church that I'm not aware of? That you have to get a Slurpee every 2 days?
I don't know what it is. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they're substituting Slurpees with alcohol.
Is that what it is?
But you're right. That's a keen observation. They're everywhere there. I don't know.
Ryan, you're like, listen, I've never had a drink in my life, but I do have type 2 diabetes, just so you know.
It's true. I'm trying to give up sugar now, to be honest, which is about impossible.
Come on. You can't do that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying. It's very difficult. People say they did it, but I think they have two problems, actually. I think they're still on sugar and they're liars, frankly. I think they're dishonest. But I'm giving it a go.
What's that? No sugar, no grain diet? Is that what you're doing, the NSNG thing?
No, I'm not going that far. I'm really just trying to cut out like candy and desserts and those type of real obvious sugars and back off on the carbohydrate types of things. But yeah, well, you know, I don't know. This is how I have to live. I just want to be healthy so I can perform and keep traveling and do this.
Right. It's tougher on you though. I understand though, because you are 8.5 feet tall on stage. So yeah.
Yeah, you would think that this is the size of this body that I work around to be able to handle sugar, you know, dissipate slowly.
People think you sit there and gnaw on entire sugar canes or something like an animal. Just sitting there eating. Oh, my God, it's Ryan Hamilton. What's he doing? He's eating a tree. That's what they do in Idaho between picking season. All right, well. All right, Spud Money, we'll see you here. DJ Spud Money. Yes. I love that, dude. You got to go with that one. That's hilarious.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that. I do want to mention real quick that if anybody has seen the special and you're planning to come to the show, you're going to get all new material.
Oh, cool.
It's all new. So
okay.
That's another question I get asked a lot. Is this the stuff that I've seen? No, it's all new. I might do a couple of jokes from the special because people like to hear it, or you've brought people that haven't seen the special. But I've got a new hour of material that I'm very excited to share.
So, well, we will see you there, man. I live right up the road, so yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing you there as well. Ryan Hamilton.
Oh,
it was
great.
Yeah. Come on over to the house. We'll grill something with no sugar on it and no potatoes. All right? We don't do that here.
Thank you, Jim.
All the best, Ryan. Be well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.